Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Aloha from the final edition of the Hawaiian Swing for The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume. I'm looking at a very floral, very tropical looking Smiley Kaufman over there, and yet another sublime RLX product. And Smiley, this feels like two things. You're about to issue a wistful aloha to Hawaii tomorrow as you head home with your family. Very appropriate for all of us to be watching tropical golf from afar, because this was a big snowy week in a lot of places where there isn't normally snow. We were sledding on the Hope Valley Range on Saturday morning, first time Walker's seen snow. And I would assume, did you check in with the Squirrel Man? Did we get any snowfall in Birmingham, Alabama?
Buddy, we got 3 inches in my house.
Yeah. How about that? And Meanwhile, Anna Carter's over doing some hula action. She's the dancing queen of Hawaii. Looked like just a wonderful family trip for you all.
She is a big fan of the luau. She's also a big fan of shave ice. It's not shaved ice. I didn't know that. Apparently that's a Hawaiian thing. It's shave ice. She's crushed the beach life. I mean, dude, it's so perfect here. I mean, Hawaii's awesome. It's amazing. We're going to take in the day tomorrow. Before we get on the voyage to Atlanta, which is going to be quite the battle, but we're built for it. Yes. We've been through the trenches. Every parent knows the battle that they have on these long flights, and we're ready for it.
If you've done it once, you can do it twice. So yeah. I'm not worried about you.
So the one question I have for you about Hawaii, and this is something that Anna Carter just absolutely loved, I did too, and it's acai bowls.
Mm.
Acai bowls are so tasty. They're so cold on your teeth, and they feel like it's a smoothie. And I was thinking to myself, are they healthy? Like, are acai bowls healthy? Like, you got all the fruits and stuff, but the actual, you know, the cold blue purplish thing that at the bottom, is that stuff healthy? And that's where I wanted to ask you, because I think we have some acai bowl addicts in our family. I think I'm one of them. And I think Anna Carter might have a bit of a problem. She loves these things.
I'll say acai bowl. There are a few that have a better PR campaign than acai bowls, because I tend to agree with you with the composition question we're having here. Is like, this all theoretically could be healthy and good, but are we really sure that what we're eating, it almost tastes too good for it to be entirely healthy?
Well, the name, if it was anything different, acai just sounds healthy, right?
It does. It does. It's great. It's great branding. It's great PR across the board. Whoever's behind Big Acai, you did a great job. You should get a big raise. This is going to be a tough scene for me. I am not really a fruit guy at all. Like, I just don't eat a lot of fruit. Now, the weird thing is I love all vegetables. I'll eat just about any vegetable, any way you prepare it. Big veggie guy. Make a green shake. But like, the most fruit I consume, I do consume fruit daily in the form of a smoothie. I put some frozen blueberries and some bananas in my smoothie. But like, I'll say it this way. I used to not, when I was a very small child, I would not allow my mom to tie my shoes if she touched a banana, because I told her that she had banana hands. So that's like my phobia level as it relates to fruit. So it's tough. I wish I wasn't built that way, but you know, I happen to be the opposite of Anna Carter and yourself in terms of just the acai, you know, consumption. It looks delightful. It looks like a nice, healthy, low-cal treat, and I wish I could eat it, but
I just checked out Google and AI overviews giving me the are acai bowls healthy, and they said acai bowls can be healthy, but the nutritional value depends on the ingredients. Okay.
That's I don't know. That's a little disconcerting. Packed. You'd want it to be just a hard yes. they are healthy and you should feel good about eating them. You should continue to eat them. But that feels like there's a little bit of room to fudge there.
It's a smoothie in a bowl, and it's terrific. We loved it. So if anybody's got an opinion on acai bowls, on whether they're healthy or not, let us know. Because if they're not, we might have to take myself and Anna Carter to some type of facility to wean our way off of acai bowls.
Or just lean into it. Just get some hot wrecks for good acai spots in Birmingham and just double down. Just be huge acai people.
Yeah.
I think that's the way you go. I think that's the way you go. Love that.
I'm going to miss the fruit here. I know you just said you're not a fruit guy, but the pineapple just, gosh, it gets me excited too about golf season. I know you're in the cold and you just were, you know, sledding down the range, but I kind of got the itch. And it's going to suck when I land, and it's going to be like, okay, never mind. You're going to have to take those Hawaiian thoughts and of sunshine and good weather and push that along another couple months.
I'm lucky that I got the Florida swing, my own version of the Florida swing in December heading into January. Okay. That was enough for me to scratch the itch a little bit, but it was a very tough scene, you know, to watch my son hit golf balls left-handed for the first time for a few days and then take him home. He's like, you know, can we go outside, Dad? I'm like, yeah, you know, you can. I don't know how much longer I'm going to last out there, but it's
what plastic clubs did you buy? Because I want to get some for Anna Carter for her birthday.
Yes, this is I am not being paid to say this in any way, shape, or form. So this is an endorsement of how good they are. There is a company called Lagshot.
Lagshot. Okay.
If you're a person who uses your Instagram to consume golf content and you're also a parent, you've probably been targeted with some of their content. The guy who owns it, I exchanged some messages with him. His son is also left-handed, this little blonde kid who I can't be more than two or three and absolutely stripes the golf ball. They make a driver, they make three different sizes of seven irons. And so I actually got the right-handed lag shot, and they make them for adults too. You can get them at adult lengths, and it's like one of those kind of whippy swing trainer type things to get your tempo right. But then they also make a short version of it, and the benefit of it is that it's the head is weighted properly.
Wait, these are like legit.
They're so legit, and they're weighted properly to where, like, when you're swinging the golf club, it's not like hitting a plastic club, but there's enough whip and flex in the shaft where they're not swinging a telephone pole.
Oh, wait, but so, I don't know if she's a righty or lefty. What do we do about that?
You know, you could come use my loaner set. You could end up where I ended up, where basically.
Well, I think you buy the righty. Any good parent knows they buy the righty. We start there and then we go from there.
Statistically, you start with the right-handed club. And that's going to save you a lot of money and effort down the road. And you hope your kid's right-handed. But then when your son is flipping over the right-handed club and staying on the left-hand side of the ball and hitting trick shots with the toe of the club, you start to ask yourself,
okay,
is my son left-handed? And maybe I just spend another $60 and change, or whatever it was, to get the left-handed version. And lo and behold, he is left-handed. Now we're going on a different journey. So that's lag shot. Check him out if you want, like, if little kids.
I'm worried about her being a lefty. I mean, obviously, if she's a lefty, it's fine. But Francie's a lefty. My brother's a lefty. Francie's dad is a lefty. Francie's brother's a lefty. So there's something in the water as far as Anna Carter potentially being a lefty.
I texted your dad, texted the squirrel man. I said, do you have any hot tips for me knowing that you raised Lucky as a left-handed golfer? And he said, I forget the name of the instructor. I should go back and look. He's like, I just sent him to get lessons with this guy. Like, I didn't even worry about it. But now my dad's left-handed. So it's kind of cool in a way where, like, I grew up, you know, splitting a bucket of balls with him, throwing it down between us.
It's
and
great.
You hit it on both sides. And then it's like, I'm just doing it all over again with my son. So
yeah, Lucky and I did that our entire lives.
So Spin Zone 2. If you're going to be a left-handed golfer, do it in 2025, not like the 1970s or 80s. Like, it's you could get not the same full range of equipment right-handed, but you can get enough, I think. So there we go. That was a deep dive and a good tangent, but well worth it for the dad pod crew on and maybe the mom pod crew on the Smiley Show.
Yeah, so, there you go. You know,
there you go. Let's get to the golf, Smiley, because a thriller finish, second in 2 years of playoff finish at the Sony Open at YLI. And we're going to get to another thrilling close for Nick Taylor. This guy has the clutch gene in spades. I want to even get to, like, looking back at last year. I know he's pressing. He didn't play good at the end of the year and then was not picked for that President's Cup team. But just seeing him continue to come through in the clutch, like, it maybe was that a miss for Mike Weir on that team? We're going to get to Nick today as well, and the way he got into this playoff, the way he won this playoff. But this was a movie with four main actors. You almost have to kind of tell the story chronologically to get the story of the day. And so let's start with J.J. Spahn, who was a leader for most of the day, and Steven Yeager, who was in and around that lead and dueling with him. Because for about 75% of their rounds, they played what I very affectionately call smiley golf, which is to say that they just explored all the various parts of the property off the tee and ended up with some interesting lies in the process. But by golly, when that ball hit the bottom of the cup, it was worst case of par, and often it was an insane birdie from a crazy position. That's smiley golf to me. However, as you know, at this level, you know, playing these tour courses, at a certain point, you have to pay the piper. And that's what happened for J.J. Spahn and Steven Yeager. And so I want to pass it off to you there, just charting their day. And then you noted this on the broadcast, had a couple interesting observations, particularly about Steven Yeager's tee club choice. It's like, how did the day break down for those two, and how did they play their way out of this playoff?
Yeah, I think when we came on air, there was like 23 guys within four shots of the lead. So we really didn't know what the day was going to unfold. We felt like J.J. Spahn, based on the start that he got off to, that he was going to be a player in this play that you're talking about. And he looked really good on the front nine, looked rock solid. And Steven Yeager, too. Both of those guys looked really good. And when things started to get a little off was the ninth hole. Both guys looked like they're in a really good position to make birdies. Yeager hits it in the greenside bunker. Everybody had gotten it up and down, hits it to 8 to 10 feet, misses the putt. And then J.J. Spahn three putts. And you're like, all right, okay. First kind of, I would say, hiccup from both of these guys, because the ninth hole is one you got a birdie. Same with the 18th. And then the backs, all right, so we get to 10. And this is when the lefts show up for both guys. You know, Steven if you're not familiar with Steven Yeager, he used to be a miserable driver of the golf ball, hit it short and crooked. It's a terrible way to go throughout life. And that's how Yeager's professional driving career was. He was an awful driver. And somehow, I don't know who gave him the advice, but I know Josh Gregory was involved. And Yeager was like, hey, I'm going to go try to put on speed. That's like the last thing you want to do for a guy who hits it crooked. It's like, we don't want to hit it even further and crooked into the crap. But for whatever reason, it changed his approach and how he views how he gets onto the tee box, because he plays aggressively, he hits driver, he hits it hard, and he goes and finds it. And what he was doing a really good job of the entire week was when he missed through the dog leg or on the correct angle to be able to play up the green. And what he was doing on the backside, he was missing left and on the inside of the dog legs and where the hole locations were cut. He was basically either short-sided or was forced to play for par. And he got lucky a couple different times, I would say, on that backside, but to make birdie at 14. But you also got to give him credit for getting up and down and like staying in it. And J.J. Spahn, same deal. Like, he's grinding his tail off. And I guess that kind of gets us to the 15th hole, which is when things kind of like really start to unfold, because Nick Taylor and Nico Echevarria were two groups in front, and Nick Taylor hit, I thought, one of the best shots of the tournament at 15, hits it to like 4 feet with the 7-iron. I'm like, okay, Nick, I could see him sneaking into a playoff. Misses the putt. Right. Okay, sweet. And then Nick on the next hole hits it to 4 feet, misses. You're like, oh my gosh. Well, especially with the guys behind him, like, what is going on? And then Nico gets up and down at 15, makes about I'd say a 15 to 18 footer for par. And then gets up and down from about 140 on 16 from a fairway bunker and makes birdie. So Nick all of a sudden had an opportunity to be like tied for the lead with the guys at 16 with JJ and Steven. And now Nico is like, somehow in the golf tournament. And that's when we kind of get to 15, where guys hit good putts. JJ and Nico, or JJ and Yeager, both miss. And then we get to 16T. And that's where I was like, okay, here's the golf tournament, because Steven Yeager had missed it left on pretty much every hole in the backside with his driver. And he elected to be aggressive, like his plan was going into today. Was like, hey, I'm going to be aggressive. It's going to either work out or it's not. Well, snap hooks it, hits it out of bounds. And you're like, ah, it's over for Steven. But then he bombs the next provisional ball to like 80 yards out. And JJ hits his three wood into the left stuff. Like he's got the lefts. And then hits a beautiful wedge onto the green, like 15 feet. And Jaeger somehow makes a putt for bogey. And JJ makes the putt. JJ misses his putt for birdie. And now you're like, okay, done. What's his face? Nick Taylor is now on 18T and Echeverria is on 18T. I'm like, these guys got a shot because 17 is not an easy par. So Nick and Echeverria hit their drives in the fairway. Nick hits it over the green. And we get there kind of quick because Echeverria hits his a beautiful bunker shot, which was saucy, like a chunk and run, kind of like, I don't know. It was beautiful.
Picked
how he
hit
it.
Great landing spot. It was just phenomenal. Oh. Really, yeah.
It was great. And then there was a long ruling with Nick behind the green at 18 that it didn't appear to me that he was going to be able to chip that close to the green because it rolled through, but the TIO kept on moving him closer and closer to the green. They couldn't get the ball to stay, and they eventually got it to where he got to place it in the fairway, which was a huge break, made it to where it was a predictable chip shot. And makes a chip. You're like, what the heck is going on? Now Nick Taylor's at 16. Now Echeverria's at 16. And then they go back to 17T now, where JJ hits it into the bunker. And you're like, oh my gosh, he's about to make bogey. And then Steven Jaeger is at 15 already, doesn't make his birdie putt. And then JJ hits a very poor bunker shot to 10 feet, misses the putt. Now these two guys, I'm like, if they don't birdie 18, they're missing the playoff. And what the heck have we been doing over the last 3 hours covered Spahn and Jaeger?
Well, and there was which hole was it where JJ had a par save? It was the hole that Steven Jaeger birdied. So I think that was maybe that was 14. Yeah,
14.
Where JJ hit another chunky bunker shot and left it
that,
short.
That's
and
then, understand. That was a more understandable one because you couldn't make the mistake of like flying it over because that's where you make double bogey and lose the tournament.
Sure.
I think he was playing for a bogey and it just happened to hit an incredible putt and make that par putt. But Jaeger made a 40 footer, but he was lucky, I thought, to catch a lie left in that rough to be able to keep it on the green, because if he gets a lie that's sitting down, he's playing out to the right or towards the front of the green. So he was, I felt like lucky to have a 40 footer for birdie.
So then we get to 18T with Spahn and Jaeger, and they're both a shot back of Nick Taylor and Nico Echeverria in the house of 16. So really, you know, obviously you have seen a leaderboard at this point. You know that both those guys finished at 15 under, missed the playoff. So no real need to go into the way that JJ Spahn went about making par. But I think the one last key thing there that I thought was a really interesting observation from you on the broadcast was club selection for Steven Jaeger on 18T, and where he really could have almost hit the exact same shot off the tee with the driver and carried that bunker and would have had a chance to make birdie and get in the playoff.
Yeah, it was about 295 over it, down and off the right. It's hot. So maybe they felt like three wood was enough to carry it. But in my mind, the way he entered the day and the way he approaches his driving, it was always a driver in my mind for him. I still don't really fathom the understand the reasoning why he didn't hit driver, because maybe it's just because he didn't feel comfortable with it and he felt like he needed to be in the fairway being one back. But there were plenty of guys making birdies from the rough over the bunker to the left or right. Just felt like to me, you know, the way he plays the game, he just kind of went against that on the 18th tee.
Is it, how much of that is it his caddy's responsibility to understand? Because, I mean, we've all been there. Well, I shouldn't say we all have. I know as an amateur player who doesn't always, or most of the time doesn't have a caddy, we've had those days where you hit it like garbage off the tee with your driver all day long. Then you get to a hole where you absolutely need to hit a driver and you're like, I'm not hitting that damn club one more time. I'm going to hit a three wood or a two iron. I don't care how much yardage I have into the hole. I'm just hitting something different because I don't want to look at that club anymore.
Yeah.
Is there a little bit of a responsibility of the caddy there if that is similar to how it maybe went down where he's like, dude, you can hit the driver here and go as far left as you want to because you can go into 10 fairway or go over on 10 and still have a shot.
You can't hook it that much, but like you could have ended up in the left rough.
Yeah.
That would have been a snap hook to hit it into 10 fairway. But the way I see, I mean, he may have hit three wood earlier in the week. I'm sitting here looking at his tracers right now. And in round three, he hit one 321. That seems like that would be a long way for a three wood to go, but it very well could have been a three wood. Round two. Round two. Wow. So Steven hit the palm tree off the tee.
Okay.
And it only went about, it went 119 yards off the tee. So round one, it looks like he pulled the drive off, hit it through the fairway, and was able to make birdie. So all that being said, I'm it's odd because I don't mind criticizing guys based off of strategy because the guy was so gritty on the backside. I love how he plays the game. I just feel like when you get in a situation at the end of a golf tournament, you need to be as true to yourself and how you've played that day, especially for a hole that I would say is one of the hardest fairways to hit on the tour. Nick Taylor and Echevarria made it look pretty easy in the playoff, but it was the hardest driving hole the entire week to hit the fairway, less than 50% chance to hit it. So if you're Jaeger, for a guy who doesn't pride himself on hitting fairways, why are we trying to squeeze something in with a three wood on the 72nd hole when we can just bomb, blast a driver and go find it in the rough and like hit a 8 or 7 iron out of the rough and chase something up there?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that, you know, as we're sitting here criticizing Jaeger, the second ball birdie on 16, when the broadcast is flying a drone over some guy's swimming pool as you're looking for your ball at that point. Like the
great to be able pool. To get,
great, pool. Great looking pool, by the way. But to be able to get it back together and make that to stay in contention. I mean, he had a ton of grit. You know, both he and Spahn just, you know, didn't have it off the tee for a large portion of the round and still were able to finish one shot off that final number. So, but yeah, tough to miss out in the playoffs. So then we get to the playoff. Nick Taylor, Nico Echevarria. And I think you could say, I think you'd probably say after the second shot on both of those playoff holes they played, you're thinking advantage Nico. In fact, Nico, his first playoff hole, the original approach shot he hits, crowd thinks it's great. You all think it's great on the broadcast, is sitting right there on the fringe.
Yeah.
I think you called it a layup birdie, maybe even has a chance to run it in off the fringe for eagle, and then it rolls into the rough and then sort
break.
Of match changes.
It was a really good shot that ended up in a bad break. And just like one quick thing on JJ, just to clean up those last two guys before we just get into the full playoff, is that, you know, JJ lost and missed out by the playoff by one shot. And gosh, he had, I want to look at the feet of putts that he had on 15, 16, 17, and 18. Oh. Because they all were, if they all weren't under 10 feet, they had to be close. I know the putt at 15 was probably right around 10 feet. 16 was right around 10 feet. Same with 17 and 18 was a little underneath that. So you got four putts in that 8 to 12 foot range and not able to make one of them. That's really frustrating for him, I imagine, when he looks back on it, because he played really solid. I thought his ball striking, his iron play, his demeanor looked like a winner today. It looked like the guy that was going to end up on top. So it's going to be frustrating for JJ just with the opportunities that he had. Jaeger, you know, you love like the up and down, the way he played. I wish he would have stuck to his guns a little bit more on 18, but still I love the way he plays the game. And obviously we'll get into the playoff here.
Yeah. Well, listen, nobody's more heartbroken than I am that JJ Spahn lost this tournament, because I believe it was 2 years ago, also in Hawaii at the Century, that JJ wore the infamous Puma untucked full button down shirt that I saw him playing in and immediately said, that needs to be our team uniform for Hope Valley Men's League this year. And we rolled it out, and by golly, we won a championship in it. So JJ, I was going to wear that on the show for you tonight. We'll have to save that for another occasion. Hawaii has been friendly to JJ, and hate to see him come up short today. Let's get on to that playoff. Nick Taylor, Nico Echevarria. I kind of teed it up there on the front end, you know, just talking about the difference in those approaches. And honestly, you referenced that Nico Echevarria bunker shot and the placement on that shot earlier in this episode. I thought the pitch shot that Nick hit, I don't even know if it was a pitch, because I think he ballparked it about 50 yards on the second playoff hole.
It was a pitch.
Unbelievable to kind of land that right there on the front of the green and have it, you know, chase up to, you know, wherever that 2 feet 9 inches, I think it was, to win this tournament. It was amazing stuff.
It really was impressive. I thought both the chips were really good because they weren't easy. Downwind, having to hit like the ultra spinner, everything works away at the back part of that green. So it was, you know, a guy that I think Dan may have said it on the broadcast. Just like, man, this guy just needs to play every day like he's in the lead because he just has that look about him that he's not going anywhere, that he's clutch. And I think you kind of mentioned this too, is that
President Scott.
It just never made sense for him not to make that team. It was overthought. Nick Taylor's ability to make big putts. I don't care about what the stats say. It was a mistake to not have him on that team. Were they ever going to beat the U.S.? I don't know, but you got to take Nick Taylor to Canada. You just got to.
I 1,000,000% agree. I'd rather lose a President's Cup with Nick Canada, or with Nick Canada, with Nick Taylor on his home soil because he has an off week, you know, and just have that be the way it goes, then have the chance of him showing up and just, I mean, it's kind of insane, especially when you chart the progression of the round as you did, where he misses 2 4-footers when he definitely has a chance at winning this golf tournament, is in and around the lead, but there's not like that inherent pressure of 72nd hole needing to chip in for eagle, or now I'm in a playoff and I need to come up with some, you know, pretty miraculous shots to either keep the playoff going or win it. I mean, that it's amazing how he has the ability to flip the switch. So it's one of those guys where, of course, you could look at his form in the latter half of 2024 and say, maybe there are other guys out there that are playing a little bit better right now. But I just think you kind of throw that out the window for Nick Taylor when you know his ability to come up in the clutch and he'd be playing in front of a home crowd. And that adds so much more to that sort of sense of clutchness, I guess.
It was a mistake. Yeah. You know, you do your best with statistics to try to fill out your team, but I don't care about what the form says. He had to have been on that team. He would have, you know, I just seems silly that he wasn't when you look back on it.
Let me ask you quickly on Nico as well. So he, on that second playoff hole, he kind of feathers in that nice little high cut, lands center of the green, releases to the back of the green. You know, Nick, at that point, we're thinking, yeah, it's going to be a tough kind of downhill putt, but Nick's 50 yards short, and that's a tough pin placement from that angle. We have no idea where he's going to end up in terms of a putt for birdie at this point. Nick gets it close, so obviously there's more pressure at that point, but he leaves that first putt. It's a bad putt. You know, he leaves it 6 feet, you know, short, and I can't tell from the angles, but maybe looks like it's above the hole. Do you feel like he played a little fast there? I felt like the time between when that putt came to rest and when
felt,
he was over
it. It did feel fast to me. You definitely were on to that. It didn't feel like Wesley Bryant fast, like when he was at the R7 trying to make the cut, but it definitely felt a little quicker. But hey, I like guys trying to stick closer to their routine than you know, taking longer to try to, you know, really find something. But it was a really poor first putt. I thought that he was going to really have a chance to make that putt, and to come up that far short was surprising. Yes, wind gusts make things very challenging out there. Probably a putt he's never hit before, but you know, in moments like that, I was expecting him to come up pretty big, and he was coming up incredibly big in how he played down the stretch and how he's played this entire fall. I mean, he had four. This is the fifth top 11 that he's had. He had an 11th at one of those events in the fall, but pretty much like four top fives in the last 3 months or so. So he's working his way up the official world golf ranking. He's a player that just continues to impress me. I must say, like, from a guy that I competed against when he was at Arkansas, he just keeps getting better. And I thought the one interesting thing that I picked up on just looking back at his first year on the Korn Ferry Tour, or coming off the Korn Ferry Tour, is that he missed 23 cuts his first year. But he also won. That's the only reason he kept his card. You know, he kept that 2-year exemption for that. So he just keeps improving, and he switched golf balls and went to Strixon. We talked about this in the one and done. I think you liked Echeverria this week.
I did.
And I think you recommended him to some people, and I liked him too, but I was a little concerned about like him telling me about his getting used to the golf ball and just his wedge game was off at Kapalua. But man, he looked like how he did in the fall, which was you know, a player that's just not afraid to shy away from a big moment. Just unfortunately not able to get that putt to go down at 18.
Well, you're doing a light version of our new segment, which is the Sicko Gear Tinkerers report. So
yeah, I got some.
Well, I kind of want to follow up on that piece of just, you know, where he's, because it's two things I want to ask you, of course, is for the full report there. What was it, balls and wedges for Nico, or just the ball was the main switch he made this year?
Shoot, I don't know what's in his bag. I assume he's got tricks on stuff in the bag too.
Yeah. Maybe just a little more detail on why the ball changed. Because you do hear guys talk about, I think it's overlooked a lot. Like, that's the one piece of equipment you use every single shot. So why he liked that. And then maybe just some thoughts on, because I guess in my mind, if he wins this tournament, we're sitting down here tonight. And the question I'm asking you is, the guy's won three times now on tour. And, you know, do you feel like really, because there's no better indication of you know, what the issue is than the first year on tour where he has a win and 23 missed cuts. It's just consistency, right? So it's like now he wins in the fall at the Zozo and with some stiff competition and JT and others. And that's not like, of all the fall fields, that's one of the stronger ones, right? So it's like picking up wins like that. And this would have been, again, not the strongest field in the world, but a regular season PGA Tour win. Do we feel like he's trending to a place where he is more consistent and he will be sort of a breakout star on tour? So just maybe thoughts on that before we wrap our Sony Open coverage for the week.
Oh, he just beat the guy that shot 35 under last week, Hideki Matsuyama. So, I mean, I don't pretty really good. Care as much about the field. As like the number's always going to be the number, give or take a top player coming in and shooting a couple more. But it doesn't matter about the talent that you perceive. These guys are really good at golf. The number that these guys got to was really good, and I felt like really difficult conditions. The wind was up all week. Wasn't easy to get around this place. And I'm impressed with plenty of guys that really, you know, jumped off the page at some shots they hit this week, which is exciting to see some of these new guys come up too that I haven't laid my eyes on yet.
Well, that's perfect. You're teeing up our another new segment we launched last week. And this, I think this one's going to have some real legs. So you're on site again this week. Last week we did a yet as unnamed segment. We had a little bit of social suggestions there. We haven't nailed down what this is yet, but basically maybe Smiley superlatives, something like that. And effectively it's all the four main strokes gain categories: off the tee, approach, around the green, and putting. Not necessarily the leader of those categories, but who impressed you in each of those categories this week at YLI. So let's start with off the tee.
Oh gosh. Can kind of go one of two ways here. And I'm actually going to pick the same person twice because I think they're like very similar.
You're allowed to do that.
We Gary make the rules Woodwin and Patrick Fishburne. They remind me so much of each other, and they both had really good driving weeks. I was so impressed at Patrick's ability to flight iron shots down off the tee and hit a stinger. And we've watched Gary Woodland over the last decade or so hit these stinger shots and change trajectories off tees, hitting it really long and also hitting shots. That's what Fishburne does, man. He reminds me a ton of Gary Woodland, and Gary drove it really well this week too. He was a guy that was accuracy wise. He was right around the top 10 and had a really nice week.
Yeah, one of my tired stories I trot out every once in a while on the show was the fact that I played with Patrick Fishburne in a Corn Ferry Tour Pro-Am for the UNC Health Championship.
Oh, really?
at Raleigh CC.
Dude, he's good, man.
So really nice guy. And the one shot, I mean, the whole nine holes we played with him, he was awesome. But the one shot I'll remember is there is a par three at Raleigh CC that is like 280 yards from the tips. And I think he was back there with it was a driving iron. It was a Strixon driving iron, of course, because everyone loves Strixon driving iron. But it was like a maybe it was a P. I don't. Doesn't matter. It was like a three or four iron, and he hits this thing. Same thing. Just compresses it. Low trajectory. Flights it in there. Very casual, smooth swing. Middle of the green. I was like, just the sound that made coming off his club face and the way he hit it was phenomenal.
Yeah, he's really good. I think he's gonna have a long career.
That to me was like, let's keep an eye on this guy. So, you know, I think he's had a couple of near misses, you know, in some a number of different events. And he was in the mix with Zach Blair at the Zurich. And so just I think he's going to get a win at some point, but it's hard to close on tour. But guys has a ton of talent. So that was my little filibuster there on off the tee. So let's get to approach next.
JJ Spahn. His iron game was ridiculous this week. He, you know, it's not easy to fill up the GIR stat at this place because, you know, if you don't drive it in the fairway, it makes it really difficult to hit the greens. And at one point, I think during the day, I looked at his GIR stat and it was like close to 85%. He missed one fairway over the first 2 days, one green over the first 2 days. So, I mean, hard not to go with a guy, JJ Spahn, who I think had a career iron week.
And then next to around the green, and of course that's Bermuda everywhere, so you can catch some wonky, you know, grainy lies there, kind of weird rough. So who'd you like most around the green this week?
Nico Echeverria. I think he just continues to show that he's got a bit of a flair, a Colombian flair that he plays the game with, and I think you gotta be really nice with the wedge if you're going to be a good Colombian player. It reminds me kind of how Camilo plays with all this intensity. And I think the bunker shot he hit at 18 was just shows you how good of a feel that he has with different shots to be able to play like this punchy 56 chunk and run shot on the 72nd hole in a time where he had to have it. That's one shot that comes to mind. There were plenty of others too, especially in other events that I've covered him in. He just continues to amaze me in his fearlessness when it comes to hitting certain shots around the green.
Yeah, speaking of the Colombian flair, he's got a new one I'm adding to my toolkit of celebrations. That birdie putt he made on 16, he goes arriba, like, oh, I like that. I'm gonna borrow that one. I'll trap that one out the next time I have a chance to made putt at Hope Valley. Arriba. So okay, that's around the green. And then finishing up with who impressed you most putting this week?
Nick Dunlap. He's not driving it good right now, but his putting's a joke. It's the only reason that he finished in the top 10. His driving stats really struggle to Kapalua, same here at Sony, but there's really not a ton of OB at this place. So you just kind of go hit it and find it, get it on the green. And that's what Nick Dunlap did. A really gritty top 10 for a guy who's never been at this at YLI, first time around it. Because remember, last year was his first PJ Tour win, first win as an amateur. So everything now he's going to be seeing for the second time starting at the Amex.
Hot putter heading into the Amex, a place which John Rahm once affectionately referred to as a piece of blanking putting contest. I like that. I like that for Nick Dunlap. Might pop up in our one and done picks this week. So there you go. That's Dunlap. We have Dunlap for putting, Nico Echeverria for around the green, JJ Spahn for approach, and then a split award for Gary Woodland and Patrick Fishburne off the tee. So
can we do one more just award as we got a whole new crop of Korn Ferry Tour players?
Another smiley superlative. Let's add one to the list.
I think the one that jumps out, obviously the guy who performed the best coming off of that is Jackson Suber, player out of Ole Miss.
Speaking of Rahm, the guy who was the alt that got in when Rahm withdrew with the foot injury at the U.S. Open last year.
Oh, that's right.
How about that?
He had a good week. Seemed like he was. I'm looking down the list here to see if there's any Korn Ferry Tour player. Oh, the other one would be Paul Peterson. He had a really good week. He was up there all
leading
up pretty much
one,
the
right?
entire time. Yeah. So Paul and Jackson Suber, good start for those two guys.
Many people are saying 36 years old or people who are 36 are in some of the best rookie times of their life. And they really just have all their life ahead of them. So, you know, just I'm not saying that particular about anyone who's 36, but just good to see Paul Peterson play well. That's a wrap for our Sony coverage, unless there's anything you want to add, Smiley, because we're doing a little bit of a truncated show here a little bit this week. And I'm excited about what the rest of the week has to hold, because we have, you know, and we really didn't even get into this in this part of the episode. I mean, if you missed Smiley's conversation with Luke Klein as part of the Friday Happy Hour at the Sony Open, and maybe you have a few extra comments on that as we go out, but just he missed the cut this week. But Luke, 17 of the 20 points he needs to get his card via the accelerated program. I'm sure we're going to see him get a few more exemptions, you know, and the rest of the, you know, coming out of the winter into the spring, and might lock that card up before he ends up graduating or, you know, playing in the NCAA championships this year. So we'll just see how the rest of that the rest of that season progresses for him at Florida State. But he's obviously an amazing talent that we've talked about a lot on the show. This next piece of the show that we'll share with you is a conversation I had with David Ford, who's a senior at my beloved University of North Carolina and currently the number one ranked player in the PGA Tour U rankings, which is how he earned an exemption this week at the DP World Tour into the Hero Dubai Desert Classic. So ton of fun catching up with him, a guy who's obviously eyeing that tour card via that program. Also had a lot of thoughts on NIL and just the changing college golf landscape, among other things. So that'll be a cool conversation. And then later this week, we have your conversation with Elvis Smiley, your shared namesake who won to start the DP World Tour year in Australia. He's a phenomenal Australian talent playing that last group with Cam Smith and Mark Leishman. So, you know, cool to see him get a win there. So we'll share that conversation later this week. And also we'll start that episode reflecting on some big comments that made news this week from another guy who came out of college, a phenomenal talent, Eugenio Chikara, and then decided to go to live instead. And so just reflecting a little bit on that and what that means for the state of maybe some young guys and their decision they're making, kind of turning pro and coming on a tour. So a lot of focus on some youth talent in the game of pro golf right now, which is very exciting. So Smiley, with that tee up, before we get to David Ford, anything you want to send the people out with as you wave aloha to Wailea?
Yeah, excited to get back to the frozen tundra. And I might as well just give the fine people that are watching on YouTube a nice look at the view that I've had.
Yeah,
this
that's
week.
Good.
It's terrific.
That's perfect. So give us a little Hawaiian screensaver on the way out. Love this. Here we go. We're looking at the top of Smiley's headphones here.
Here we go.
Okay, good looking balcony.
Yeah, hold on. I gotta work my way down.
Okay,
here.
We're working on the contrast here. This is great audio for
everyone
to show up.
Man, it's, oh, hey, I don't know how to focus it, though.
Look at that.
There's a beach there.
That's good enough. Look, I see palm trees, I see sand, and I see water. That's kind of the formula right now.
All right, well, I got so many things in my hand, so see you later.
All right, thanks, Smiley. And here you go, David Ford, the number one ranked player in the PGA Tour U program. Enjoy that conversation now. Welcome to what is a Smiley Show, I guess, special feature of sorts. I am Charlie Hume, and to borrow a video board turn of phrase, I am a Tar Heel, and that's why I'm thrilled to be looking across the screen at another man who is a Tar Heel, David Ford. David, I got a quick little bio for you here. Of course, senior at the University of North Carolina, the number one ranked player right now in the PGA Tour University standings by virtue of a great fall that saw you win twice. And by virtue of that position in the PGA Tour University standings, you've earned an exemption into the Hero Dubai Desert Classic on the DP World Tour. Really cool stuff. But here's where we got to start first, David. And this question is going to reveal a lot about your character, who you are as a human being, is that anytime someone has an international trip planned, there's only one of two things that happens. Either you're a type A person, you have the passport ready to go, rock months in advance, or you're like, oh my gosh, I'm scrambling. I got to book a last minute appointment to get this thing done. So what was your passport situation heading into this event?
That's such a good question. I have I've had a few international trips in the last year and a half or so. So thankfully I have my passport in one spot all the time. And I keep it there. I feel like pretty good at managing where it is. So I have my passport confirmed. I'm ready to go.
That's huge. That's a big part of the process. I know there've been a number of times where I've gone to travel and it's like, wait a second, when was the last time I updated that thing? Oh yeah, we're gonna have to scramble on that. So yeah. As mentioned, two wins in the fall. And I'll say, by the way, it is a real shame for you that they moved what is now the Truist Championship to Philly Cricket as Quails hosting the PGA Championship instead of Eagle Point like they did in 2017, because you absolutely lit up EP four seasons in a row. And if you got a sponsor exemption, you might have won the dang thing. So apologies in advance on that. But yeah, by virtue of that fall, number one in the PGA Tour U rankings, just how are you feeling general, heading into 2025? You got a tour card in sight. What's that feeling like at this stage in the game?
Yeah, it was definitely a great fall. I think the biggest thing was just taking it week by week this fall. And because we had a few tournaments that were back to back and then a little break and then two that were back to back, I feel like it gave me just enough time to rest, but not quite enough time to think about where I was or to get to results focused. So it was just, I think timing wise, a really great semester. I won twice to finish the fall, which was just a huge momentum going into the off season. And thought I was going to hit it really hard this off season, but ended up taking some rest. And yeah, feeling really energized after some travel this off season, some vacation. Just really, really ready to get it going with the guys in the spring.
Just gearing up. Got a lot of fun tournaments ahead of you. You head to a tournament fairly soon in Hawaii. You played really well out in the past. And we open this year with another big set of news on the PGA Tour University and PGA Tour U Accelerated front. More opportunities being open as it applies to you, or really the class after you, for the main PGA Tour U program. They're going to expand more access to the Korn Ferry Tour for those elite upperclassmen college players. I'm just curious, just the general vibe amongst your peer group reacting to the growth in that program and now adjusting to create even more opportunities for the best collegiate players. How do you all view that internally?
Yeah, it's only been a few days, so I haven't had much time to talk with people or to process it much. I don't even know if that I've had a conversation in person with anybody about it. But it's obviously great. I mean, the guys from the classes above me, Ludvig, Michael Thorbjornsson, even guys like Dunlap and Luke Clinton that have just proven that amateurs can play really well on the PGA Tour, have allowed us these opportunities. And so I'm thrilled about it. I'm thrilled for the guys behind me, that just, I feel like, deserve so many opportunities. So yeah, I'm pumped about it.
Do you feel like it just feels to me, maybe this is just a prisoner of the moment thing or anecdotal, but the depth of talent at that collegiate level is maybe as good as it's ever been. Is that something you agree with? And do you chalk that up to, you know, better equipment, better data, better coaching? You know, what do you feel about the state of the college game in terms of depth of talent?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a few different angles to view it from. I think one thing I've seen within the last 5 years or so is ever since I think Akshay Bhatia made that jump from high school to pro golf, you see guys doing that more and more, or at least feeling like they have a chance to do it more and more. I mean, Blades Brown and Miles Russell. I don't know if Miles is going to school, but I know Blades just turned pro. So you got guys behind me like Nick Dunlap, Caleb Surratt, who are just going pro. And I think, I'm a big believer that golf is a game of confidence, and you give guys with the talent like Caleb Surratt and Nick Dunlap, you give those guys confidence, and you give them a team around them to support them, and just a mindset focused on the future and pro golf as early as 15 or 16 years old. And I think they start to understand that they are talented enough to play on the PGA Tour. And that's kind of, yeah, I feel like that's definitely in my mind, a big part of what we've seen, just the high level amateur and college golfers going to play pro golf at honestly an earlier age than I would have thought 5 years ago.
You just listed a few guys there. Akshay, lefty out of North Carolina. Miles, lefty out of North Carolina. I know you're from Georgia. You got a blue NC on your chest though, so you got to feel good about your odds as a lefty out of North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Well, just getting back to kind of the PGA Tour year program, the Accelerated in particular, a number of rule changes there. I know for underclassmen, you're a senior now, but we can largely thank Luke Clanton for. How wild was it this last summer to you beat Luke Clanton 2-1 in the ACC championships, and then you watch him go off this last summer and go on this run? I mean, do you see that and say, man, like, I know I can beat that guy, and I'm watching him go beat a bunch of other tour pros. That's got to give you a lot of confidence, right?
Yeah, I think it does. I think getting the chance to play with Clanton in September was big as well. I mean, I had forgotten about the ACC championship that I beat him there. It was a hard fought match, and he beat me twice before that. So we only
have to mention the one you won on the show.
Yeah, but I had forgotten about that, honestly, just in light of all he did this summer. I was so focused on how good he was, but played with him 36 holes in September, and it was special. He didn't have too many bad holes. I think he kind of got unlucky. The bad holes he did have ended up costing him more than he probably wanted at Olympia Fields, but all in all, he controlled his ball better than anybody that I had seen in a while at Olympia Fields and in the fall. And yeah, I think his play over the summer and the fall in the PGA Tour, and the RSM Classic was, yeah, just amazing to see. And it did give me confidence. I think Nick Dunlap gave me a lot of confidence, him winning. But for a guy like Clinton to do it again, and even like Caleb Surratt playing at a high level in other tournaments, it's just cool to watch guys that you compete against and that you're kind of sitting back like, how good is this guy actually? And the truth is, like, they're all very good, but there's a lot of guys who are as good as them, or at least almost as good.
Having spent time, you know, playing against Luke, playing with Luke, what differentiates him? You know, what are the parts of his game where if you're out with an underclassman practicing at Finley, you're like, watch this guy do this thing and it'll make you very good at this game?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a few things. I think you look at the best players in the world and it's typically not just one thing that makes him elite, but I think Clinton controls his ball really well off the tee. He knows what he's going to get every day, and he's pretty athletic to adjust when he maybe hits a few offline at the start. His short putting is exceptional. Speed on the greens is great. That's something that I've really noticed differentiates, is just speed from, I mean, it's pretty much any putt outside of 3 feet. Like speed from 3 to 150 feet is honestly a huge part of golf. And I think Clinton does that as good as anybody. I think the tour players who play with him this year on tour would probably agree with that.
That's really interesting, because I feel like we watch high level golf and we expect to see a ton of birdies. And of course there are a lot of those, there are a lot of eagles, but I think the guys that seem to stick around the most are the ones that can minimize mistakes. And to the point you're making with Luke, to minimize three putts, you know, if you're a good lag putter and you can keep it around the hole where you can make, you know, save pars sometimes, that's more important than, you know, making a bunch of birdies, but also making a bunch of bogeys.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So just to kind of get back to where we started, you're headed off to play this DP World Tour event. And I find this super interesting. We just talked about a bunch of PGA Tour U changes. There are also a lot of changes coming to the PGA Tour proper in this next season, not 2025, but 26, where the cards that are being limited from the top 125 finishers from the previous season to the top 100. The Korn Ferry Tour graduates, instead of 30, it's going to be 20. But they kept the DP World Tour receiving those top 10 finishers on the DP World Tour, not otherwise qualified, earn their status on the PGA Tour for the following year. So I'm just curious, internal discussions, have you talked to guys at the collegiate level where they're looking at all the different ways they can turn pro, all the different potential pathways, and saying, maybe I'll go to Europe instead of trying to play through, you know, the PGA Tour Americas or Korn Ferry Tour, because that actually maybe provides a better pathway to get to the big PGA Tour?
Yeah, I haven't had conversations like that yet, and I hadn't thought about it until I saw Riggs Johnson win. I don't remember when it was. It was in the last few months, though. And when I saw Riggs,
it's not Australia, right? Yeah, it was Australia beginning of the season.
Yeah, maybe. But he won it. I think he won a DP event. Maybe
that's right. I think that's part of that opening swing. Somebody fact check me, whoever's out there in the comments. But I think that's right. Yeah.
But I know he won something either – I'm pretty sure it was DP World Tour. It was definitely a big event. And seeing that, I was like, first of all, he was a great college player, but I didn't know where he was like playing pro. I knew he was pro, but I didn't know where he was in the world, like where he was playing at or what status he had. And to win that and then to get into some other events and to honestly like to solidify yourself as like someone who's won at a high level and then created opportunities. Like that was just a clear way of like guys that I've played with that I was impressed by, but there's a bunch of guys out there who are super talented like Riggs is. So that was just the first time I ever thought of it. And to be honest, I hadn't thought much about that. I think when the time comes, I'll let my agent play into that one a little bit, but yeah, for right now, I'm just playing as good a golf as possible. And it definitely is a great opportunity and really interesting to hear guys, to hear that DP World Tour be part of the discussion though.
Yeah. And our crack research team, i.e. me, confirming it was the ISPS Honda Australian Open, the Riggs Johnston one, end of December heading into, so how about that? But yeah, I mean, and I guess for you too, like you're in a position now where keep playing like you're playing and you're just going to get your card outright. But I just think it's interesting to look at other guys who are maybe trying to, you know, find a way onto a tour, and maybe the DP World Tour is an interesting pathway and you're going to be over there playing. So a cool opportunity. To shift gears in a way, but really it's all on the same topic in terms of increased opportunities at the collegiate level, you know, NIL, the revenue sharing, it's pervasive right now, right? Like, it's all everyone wants to talk about for major sports like football, but it also has a huge impact on college golf. And so just curious, you know, looking back at the past few years and looking back at this revenue sharing, you know, period that's about to start, can you think of, you know, positive ways in which that's impacted college golf? And are there any drawbacks you've seen?
Yeah, I think being an ACC school and not an SEC school, I've seen more drawbacks. Mm. I do think it's helpful to get guys' minds thinking in the future for their pro careers. Like, I think, I mean, it's speculation, but I think that as soon as I started to understand that, okay, I can make money as an amateur, as a freshman in college, then I started to understand, like, I could actually, like, really do this for a living. And it just got my brain more comfortable thinking about money and golf together sooner than I would have thought. So I think that could be an upside. I think guys playing for pressure money, like earlier on, and just knowing that the guys that you're competing against in junior golf and amateur golf are getting paid as well at the top of that level, and competing against them is helpful for competition. So I think that might be a positive. Helping out with travel is definitely a positive for myself, my family, and definitely other people that I know. But I think the negatives is so far just with recruiting. And I think we've seen it at all sports, but I've seen it at golf. I mean, you can do the numbers. I think there's a lot of recruits in right now that are going to college, either 2024 or 2024 high school graduates, so they're freshmen now, or 2025 high school graduates, so going in this next fall. I think there's a lot of guys that are going to SEC schools, a lot of great players going to SEC schools, rightfully so. The SEC is very strong.
Great place playing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think seeing Florida State and Georgia Tech and UNC, Virginia, produce the players that they've produced, be the academic schools that they've been for so many years, and to have so many great coaches within the ACC and in the Big Ten, like Illinois, and just schools that maybe don't get enough recognition or enough funds to quite go for those massive recruits, has been difficult. And I think I saw that within the last 2 or 3 years, when we were recruiting some guys for the 2024 class. But so I think that's a drawback, just that I've seen personally with our program. But I think it, the flip side of that is, there's certainly certain guys who are chasing money out of high school, and maybe some of them need money, but some of them it is attractive to make $250,000 every year of college. I mean, that's life money that's setting you up. But I think when you look at the guys you want on your team for those 4 years, you're gonna, if you're not at a school that's paying a fortune for guys to come there, then you're going to get guys who you know you can trust, that aren't just in it for any money. So I've seen our recruits be really, really solid in not chasing money. And the guys we have coming in, I'm super confident in. And I wouldn't want it any other way with the classes we've had come in and the class we have coming in for 2025 and 2026. But I've definitely seen that with recruiting mainly.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I think I find it interesting, and this is really any sport too. You see this in football a lot as well, where, you know, you're paying a guy for potential instead of performance, you know, and I just wonder how that shifts in terms of revenue sharing, how that gets managed. You know, I know it's a very convoluted landscape, and I don't have the right way on that. I'm honestly, and I don't know anything about his recruiting process, and you can reserve comment on this. I know he's a peer of yours, but I find it interesting that a guy like Blades Brown decides to go pro instead of staying in school, knowing what he probably couldn't have gotten to stay in school. And I wonder, like, what that process looks like for Miles Russell. And maybe those guys are just already in a professional mindset and they're ready to go. And you know, and so let's just go ahead and get our money and play in big tournaments against the best, you know, names in the game. But it is a very interesting landscape. And so one that I guess we'll continue to keep tabs on and see how it develops in terms of, you know, listen, selfishly, he's a Carolina guy. I like hearing what you're saying. You know, we want the guys that want to play for the Tar Heel Blue, like, to really believe in it and really want to wear that NC on their chest. I love that. I'll segue off of this, you know, so as to not get you any hot water here. But I want to look at the swing, and I'm going to do my best Smiley Kaufman impersonation here. But of course, I'm not going to be able to analyze this on the level that he can. But here's some recent swing video of you. And is it correct? Are you still working with Chris Moore at the Atlantic Athletic Club?
Correct. Yeah.
Let's a little bit of a diversion here before we get going on this. you're, I think you're a member out there, right? Or yeah, your family members out there, right? You, I think you're about to turn maybe 9 years old when Keegan Bradley won the PGA out there. Did you go and watch any of that?
I think I did go watch it. Yeah, I don't remember much from it, but I remember watching just a little bit.
I was doing some research. I said, wait a second. He might have, young David Ford might have been bopping around watching a future Ryder Cup captain win a major. So with that said, here we go. We got some work you've been doing recently. I know you're on phone right now, so maybe a little tough for you to see. But just talk to us about what you're working on in the swing right now, what you're excited about heading into 25.
Yeah, I can see the video fine, luckily.
Okay, good. How about that?
Yeah, but my coach and I have talked a lot about this in the last year or so. Just maintaining my swing where it's at and swinging with the swing that I got, not trying to do anything fancy or anything crazy, but just making sure I'm hitting certain positions. So there's certain things I look for that are really important. One of those being that I got to keep it on plane. So I want my club on the way down coming down pretty close to my left forearm. And if it's not doing that, if it's above it or usually yeah, above it
like
is bad.
Right there.
If it's, yeah, like right at the
like we're trying we're drawing a line right there across your let's see your left or that's your right forearm.
Yeah, but go right there.
So right like there. That position yes, right there. Right there.
So that one, if I'm hitting that position where the shaft is right on my left forearm, I'm usually doing something well, and that's like a position that there's a bunch of different ways for me to hit it. I can take it back outside. I can take it back inside. But as long as I'm hitting that position, then I'm usually doing something well. And in this particular video, I'd gotten a little bit steep. And so this is after I'd worked on my coach on getting more shallow. So we hit a few draws. We got the club face just a little more shut at the top. And I worked on keeping my head back just a little bit in transition. So not shifting my upper body towards the target. So into my right foot as early and keeping my head back. And that just got me a little shallower, a little more room to swing it. And it helped out to where I can get the club face a little more shut and like still hold the angle and keep the ball not curving too much.
I love it. There's nothing better than a sweet left-hand swing. And I'm excited for you here. I only had a minor. That was my best Smiley impersonation. Hope all the swing nerds out there enjoyed that. I only got a minor mix up, confusing the right and left arm. So listen, we're not a directional podcast. We do the best we can. Yeah, there we go. So look, I kind of taking you to the end of the interview here. There's a few more things I want to run through before we wrap up and send you on your way. Right now, currently hold the lowest scoring average in UNC history. 70.44 is the last check. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. I have two questions for you. One, of course, how much would it mean to you to finish your career with that record? Second is, do you think we can get it sub 70? Like, what can we do to get it sub 70 before we walk across the graduation stage?
I think we can get it sub 70. I don't know what the math would be there. Maybe I'm mathematically eliminated from that. I do think it's possible. We're playing Mauna Lani. Yes. It's a golf course in Hawaii, and I played great there last year and didn't even putt that well. So I think I can go low there, and I love the course at the Haight Sawgrass Country Club. I didn't play great there last year, but I love that place. Typically played well at Valspar, so there's a few spots. We got our home tournament as well. There's a few spots that I feel like I could really perform well at. Hopefully get it sub 70, but that's honestly just a fun game that I'll play for the rest of the spring. It doesn't being in the Carolina record books would mean a lot to me, but it doesn't mean anything unless we win a national championship. Honestly, I mean to go 4 years and not win one with the teams we had would be tough. So I think my mind is pretty much completely off the records and just on to the national championship and trying to set a new record there. So. Yeah, we'll see.
I won't pester you too much on the topic, knowing that's your focus. But I will say, it's a shame that Seminole is not on the schedule because, again, Stevens Cup 62 at Seminole. How'd you? I've every time I've been out there, I've never seen a 62 out there. Was it not blowing? Like what happened there?
Yeah, it was probably a top five craziest round of my life. I've had some crazier ones since, but to that time it was. It was definitely top three. I made eight birdies in a row, and to start that birdie run, I missed the 12 footer for birdie. I missed a 12-footer for birdie, then I missed a 12-footer for eagle on hole 9, and that was what started my birdie run. 9 through 16, I believe, so 8 holes in a row. Missed like a, I don't know, 30-footer on 17, and missed like an 8-footer on 18 for birdie. So it was shades of junior golf for sure, missing a bunch of putts and still shooting under par, but I made a lot of putts from holes 9 through 16. Other than that, I didn't make a ton, but it was really special. I'll never forget walking up to 18th green and knowing that it was a 3-round tournament and that I'd have a really tough lead to sleep on, just with 5-shot lead at Seminole on TV after shooting 62. But yeah, it was just a somewhat difficult fall for me up to that point. Just kind of battled some stuff, so it was a huge relief to shoot that at Seminole.
Golly. I mean, I was out there for the Walker Cup. I think it was 21. Mother's Day 21 was the final day of that tournament. And I mean, that is 62 out there. That is golfing your ball. That is, I stood for a while on 18 on the right side, you know, just below that greenside bunker. And every single approach shot seemed like miss right. They didn't play it factor enough to win rules there. So to get it around a 62, I mean, that is highly impressive stuff. That's a cool memory you're going to have forever in golf. So highly impressed with that. All right. Couple of quick hitters for you. All right. And then I'm going to send you off. So first one is we're going in a completely different direction. How many wins in year one of the Bill Belichick era? So I cannot tell you how fired up I am for this, David.
I'm pumped for it too. I don't know. I mean, how many games are in a season?
Well, I'm looking at it right now. Okay. I can go, let's go through it team by team. All right. TCU, that's a win. All right. Win. Charlotte, that's a win.
Win.
Richmond, that's a win. All right. UCF might give you a little bit of a game. I'm sharpening it a win there. All right. Okay. So now we're 4-0. Then we're going to get over to the ACC. We got Cal. I'm going to go win there. Their quarterback is transferred. Stanford, they've had a little bit of a down run. That's a win. All right. So now we're 6-0. Syracuse. Syracuse was a good team last year. They knocked off Miami.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know which direction you're going. That's going to be a win. All right.
I'm saying win.
All right. Now we're 7-0. Virginia, that's a win. Wake, that's also going to be a win. Dave Clawson just retired. They're turning over. So now I think we're 9-0 at this point. Yeah. Do I have that right? Okay. We're 9-0 or maybe we're 8-0. No, we're 9-0 at this point. Clemson. That's a tough one.
Tough one.
It's a good squad. Cade Klubnick. But that's a win. That's a win. All right. That's 10. We're 10 and 0 now.
If we're 9-0, got that momentum, we're winning that.
We're 10-0. And then Duke, that's a win. Now we're 11-0. And then we're going to smash State to smithereens finish season. Now we're 12-0. And then all you got to do from there is you win the ACC championship game, CFP quarters, CFP semis, national championship. That's 16-0. I don't see how we don't go 16-0, David.
My first number was 16-0. So I'm glad we're on the same page.
Easy. All right. Sharpie it. 16-0. 16 wins for Bill Belichick to get it started in a natty. It's going to go nice in the trophy case right next to the one that you're going to win this year as well. So I'm happy about that. This last one's very self-serving, I'll admit, on the way out. Just discovered on a recent trip to Florida that my 2-year-old son swings a golf club left-handed. So do you have like condolences or hot tips or like any good recommendations on where to get left-handed junior golf clubs?
Man, I wish I started playing that early. I might have some. But, I don't know. I guess keep starting them young. I wish I had played against Fords, maybe. I mean, just give him a 7-iron and make him the best ball striker in the world.
That might be the direction we have to go. I might just have to show him some David Ford swing video. That's probably where we'll start. So, well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time. Fired up to see you in action at the DP World Tour and the rest of the season, of course, for Carolina. And go bring home, go add another natty to the case. I believe in y'all.
That's the plan.
Love it. Thanks a ton, David. Appreciate you taking time.
Yeah, thank you.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.